Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Nell Irvin Painter. She is the Edwards Professor of American History, Emerita, at Princeton University. She's written works like Standing at Armageddon, Sojourner Truth, and The History of White People. But tonight, we're talking about her new book, Old in Art School, A Memoir of Starting Over. Nell, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
This book knocked my socks off, and I'll tell you why. I was in art education for almost my entire adult life.
Yeah.
And I have never, ever read a book about art school first person, like a journal, especially a person of mature ideas and concepts.
Yeah.
This is pretty brilliant and pretty revealing.
Good. Good.
Now, you have a whole career in history, have written monumentally important books on black history. At a certain point in your life where most people are going like, well, you know, I've really had some high points in my career. You decide to do like a 180 and go to art school. That is so daring.
You know, it was really enjoyable to be a student again.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, not to be responsible, just to learn stuff, to make mistakes. It was like no fault, especially the undergraduate part.
I was going to say. But, you know, that's so daring because most people would go, well, just make art. Why did you want to specifically go the full route, the BFA and the MFA in art? What do you think that was going to bring to you?
I started going the other way. I knew that I needed some skills, so it wasn't a question, oh, just make art.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to know what the stuff was and kind of what the conversation was, but mostly, you know, what is all this stuff? But I did try a couple of classes, not at Rutgers, but like at the Newark Museum and at an art center in Summit. And I enjoyed them, but it was just pure studio. And also, the aesthetic was more, how can I put this? It was just like, make this something that is so like the thing you're depicting that I'll think it's the thing.
That's a good way of phrasing it. And the closer it looks like that thing, the better it is.
The better, yeah. And I thought, this is so boring.
Yeah.
That was not what I was interested in. So I knew that I needed more, and I figured out that the more was the ability to conceptualize something beyond. And that came to be like art history and art criticism. So then I figured out I did a 5-week very intensive drawing and painting marathon at the studio school, which was terrific. It taught me that I could commute from my home in Newark over to 8th Street in New York City and get there at 9 o'clock, and I could stand up and draw and paint in the heat the whole day and even stick around for evening crits and then come back to Newark and do it again the next day. So that satisfied part of what I needed, which was, can you do this physically? And the answer was yes. But the other thing was, even though I was getting some really important skills, just seeing and putting the eye to the hand, and I mean, I did really kind of stupid stuff, but, you know, at one point I complained to a teacher, this painting just looks so amateurish. She said, you're an amateur. Oh, yeah. I learned how to erase my drawing I'd made meticulously and do it again and then again and again. And that got me over sort of fetishizing the preciousness of my work. And now I can cut it up and paste it back together in different ways and all that. So those were really important lessons I learned at the studio school. But their idea was to turn me into a painter like Cezanne, who's a really good painter. But that's not what I wanted.
Huh.
So I figured out that I need like a university. And I had a really good art school down the road at Rutgers.
Oh, man.
Grove School of the Arts. So I was very happy with that.
Let's talk a minute about the experience at the Mason Gross School of the Arts at Rutgers. It sounds like sort of a really nice setup. You get to take public transportation into the school. And by the way, I want to mention, this book is also about your writing, which is just really beautiful.
Oh, great.
And you're sort of riding along with you, enjoying the experience of going into the school. And the school sounds really interesting and fun and supportive.
It's a really good art school.
However, you are an exotic.
Well, how old are you?
I can't believe people had the gumption to ask you that.
Over and over and over again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that personally?
I couldn't hold it against her. It was just such innocent curiosity. So I just told her, 64. And she was flabbergasted. I got to tell my mom about this. It was so sweet. It was so innocent.
Really? I read that and I was infuriated being 67.
Really?
It's like, I'm going like, how, well, you know, what businesses have been it's of yours?
No.
No. Well, you're much more generous than I am, Nell.
I'm a woman.
Okay.
We're generouser.
Now, you also can't eliminate the issues of race in your entire experience here, which at Mason Gross seemed to be a more positive experience than it did at RISD, which things got really hairy.
Mason Gross is in Rutgers, which is in New Jersey, and Rutgers has professors who are women, professors who are older women, professors who are black women. So it's not weird to have a person who's smart and black, smart and female, smart and older and black, and, you know, all that. So New Jersey is an amazingly heterogeneous state.
Right. That's exactly what it sounds like.
I love New Jersey. Rhode Island?
We'll talk about that in a bit. Let's stick with Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah. I live in Newark, where I can fade into the mass of people on the bus. I can be invisible in that nice way that people are, you know, when they're just going about their business and they're not looking at you or studiously ignoring you. Or, you know, I can be no big deal in Newark. I can also be a big deal in Newark, which is also nice.
There's some things that you write about in your experience at school that just really, there was one thing I have to talk to you about because I literally threw the book across the room.
Oh!
You were talking about art supplies, like walking into a vagina.
Yeah.
I'm never going to forget that quote. And Nell, you need to
explain.
You need to explain that, Nell, in depth.
That metaphor just came to me as, you know, I pair it with a candy shop, and the feeling of going into an art supply store.
Yeah.
It's just so enticing. I have never walked or in any sexual way gone into a vagina. Maybe I shouldn't pursue this metaphor. But
it's in print. Anyway, it's in print now.
It's a sexual metaphor that meant it as pleasure.
Right. And I got that, but still, I had never read that before, and now it's in my head.
See, see you at Blick.
Now, in all seriousness, you really go through the route that all art students go through. You struggled with painting, and at the same time, you're learning the important basic lessons. Talk to me about your relationship to formalism.
You know, I was brought up in a left-wing family, which is kind of inherently anti-formalist.
Yeah.
I grew up with political art that I treasured because it was political.
Like Benchon.
Yeah. So that's kind of the heritage I brought into Mason Gross. But I did a book before The History of White People called Creating Black
right.
Americans.
Amazing book.
And I'm glad you like that. And I decided to use black fine art instead of, I don't know, images that pretend to show you what something looked like. So instead of just showing you one image, say a photograph of Frederick Douglass, I showed you three different versions and said, these are how different artists at different times depicted. Because part of my strategy in writing that book was about historical representation. And so that was a lot of why I decided to use fine art. As I was giving myself this kind of course in African-American art history, it's not all African-American art, because it's only what relates to history and what can be pretty immediately grasped, because the people who read and teach that book are not art historians. They're just regular historians or just regular teachers, maybe not even historians. So we didn't have time to get into strategies or of representation when it would go all the way over, say, to abstraction. Couldn't do that. But one thing I realized as I was doing that was that there's more art by African-American artists than I could put in a book,
right, even
a book with those limitations. And also, there were African-American artists who didn't make political art. And I liked some of that art. I liked a lot of it. As I did that book, and then as I thought more clearly about visual representation and the rhetoric of the image, and how black artists get covered, that is, in reviews and criticism and art history, it seemed to me that it was almost as if they were interchangeable, and that the most important thing about their art was what it said about American society or American politics or international politics or the African diaspora. That is to say, of what I call the discourse as opposed to the visual meeting. And I found myself reacting against that because as an artist myself, even though I was an artist in training, an artist myself, I was grappling with issues of process and technique. And I wanted to know about how each artist, each individual artist, made her or his work. So with Glenn Ligon, for instance,
oh, yeah.
It wasn't simply these are words that comment on American history and culture. It was this is a use of charcoal on canvas.
Right.
And what size these pieces were. How did he do it? And that was the questions I wanted answered. And I didn't find the answers in almost everything I read about the work of black artists. So I became pretty much a formalist. And actually, I reviewed shape of the nation, history of the nation. It was, I saw it at in Arkansas at Crystal Bridges, and it started at the Tate, and it's about African-American art in the age of Black Power. I was, the New York Review of Books asked me to review it, that is to say the show, while it was still in London. And I said, well, I can't go to London. And they said, well, we'll send you the catalog. And it was like, you read the catalog, and it's like you can review the show. And I said, no, I can't review the art unless I see the art.
Right.
And I decided that I would go to Arkansas and go to Crystal Bridges, which was a story in itself. But so I wrote two parts of the review. One part is about the political strategies of the show and the artists. But the second part, the Crystal Bridges part, is about the art. And I said specifically in the first one, and then again in the second one, that what I found frustrating was so often, this is going to repeat what I just told you, so often the artwork of Black artists is reviewed as if it is political commentary, not as if it has visual meaning. So I wanted to do the visual part.
It's as if it has to be reduced or pigeonholed to one thing instead of the full range of the way that we look at all art. But what was surprising and incredibly infuriating to me is that when you got to, I think it was especially RISD, there was often an ignorance of Black artists that was just on display. And you would ask very point.
Not only ignorance, but a disinterest.
Well, that was the, I mean, even by the students.
Yeah.
That I like pulled hair out. I don't understand that.
I mean, they knew
Carol. This is a graduate school in art.
Yeah. They knew Carol Walker.
Everybody knows Carol Walker.
Well, yeah.
But by the way, I want to mention you have a great discussion about Carol Walker in the book. That if we go down that road, we'll use up the rest of the show.
Yeah, that's worth it. Carol Walker's, yeah.
That's worth the price of admission alone, listeners. Mm. So just buy it for that. That's a really good discussion.
Actually, there's three discussions of Carol Walker. I just have to say this. One is Carol Walker as she appears in Creating Black Americans, where I use her to comment on American history. Two is when I discover her at Mason Groves as an artist who uses a particular technique, which is silhouettes.
And three?
And three, when a big piece of hers got lent to the Newark Public Library.
That's a fascinating story.
And some of the staff got really upset. And Carol Walker came and charmed everybody, and the drape over the piece came down.
It's a great story.
Yeah. It's emblematic of what happens with visual representation and the history of visual representation pertaining to Black people. It's a thorny history.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Nell Irvin Painter. She's the Edwards Professor of American History Emerita at Princeton University. She's written world-renowned books like Standing at Armageddon, The History of White People. But we're talking about her new book, which is a totally different take and amazing in and of itself. Old in Art School, A Memoir of Starting Over. When you get to RISD, by the way, there's a whole other thing happening in your personal life throughout a large part of this book about your older parents and your poor mother who, man, I hope at some point you write a book about your mother.
Well, she wrote a book herself.
I know that. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Your mother, Donna, was just amazing, but she's dying. Your father, who has chronic depression, is trying to do that. And you're trying to do graduate art school back and forth among this. That in itself is an insane proposal.
Yeah.
And you weave that story in and among this. So you're going through a lot in your life.
Yeah.
You get to RISD and you finally figure, Here it is, one of the great art schools. This is going to be heaven.
Yeah. And it was.
Silly girl.
It was. It really was.
In the end.
For a while.
For a while.
Yeah.
And then you had one of the classic experiences when somebody asked you, do you actually take classes here?
Yeah.
How does, what, WTF?
No, normal life in the United States.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. But if you're old enough, that's not acceptable.
Well, you know, just today I came in fulminating to my husband because 2 days in a row I had walked into places of business, one here in Newark and one in Morristown, in which I opened the door and I could tell that one of the people working there saw me and then turned away. And that, I mean, you know, I didn't explode, I didn't do anything, but I came home really pissed off. So, you know, this kind of thing happens all the time. And given the kinds of things that do happen all the time that are really deadly,
yeah, I know.
It's pretty minor. But, you know, asking you basically to jump through another hoop or to prove why you should be there, you know, that's kind of American society 101.
Yeah, I know that. And again, it's not acceptable. You end up learning a lot from your peers at RISD, but this is where your age thing sort of kicks in too. And I felt so bad because you oftentimes were so alone. I mean, these are young kids.
Oh, I was so alone. Oh
man. And I mean, basically they're all young kids. They all dress in their little artsy outfits. And you have professors who are basically telling you all sorts of stuff that I was just like, ah. You know, anything that could resonate of the 20th century is garbage, basically, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So what does that mean for things that are sort of, you know, that relate to a lot of artists that are really important?
Well, it means their art history. As in history.
So you should never, ever emulate them or see them as an inspiration?
I don't think people would go that far.
Okay.
But it was an absence, let's put it that way.
Wow. Wow. And there was a lot of other things, too. And you, over time, you really develop and explore a lot of your work. And I want to mention for the benefit of people, color pictures of your work are and other people's work are throughout this book, but a lot of
No, it's all my work.
Is it? It's right. It's all your work.
Yeah. There's
and it's really, it's, I love watching that set of evolution go on.
That's why it's there. It's work in progress documented.
And it's really interesting. I love how text really starts to become very important. Talk to me about text in your work. You mentioned Glenn Ligon, and that's the first person I thought of when I saw one of your works.
Yeah. Well, I was forbidden from using text in art school. Sometimes I would sneak a little text in, and at one point in a countertops, I actually made a painting that had footnotes. I took the footnotes out pusillanimously, but I still have plans to make a painting with footnotes. But at any rate, I was very much discouraged from using text, probably because text came so easily to me, and it was my old life, and, you know, nobody knew Glenn Ligon, and so there were just a lot of reasons not to use text. Text is sneaking its way back in, but in two ways. One, as in the cover of the book, was to exorcise the history of white people.
Right.
So the text that's in my image, the backdrop of the cover, is a manuscript from the history of white people. And since then, I have used other manuscript in similar drawings. Not similar in the terms of I don't know what I'm saying here. Different drawings. How's that?
Well,
but using strips of text of my own work. Let's put it that way.
Early on in your art education, there was a pair of drawings you did of Michael Jackson, I think it was, and Apollo Belvedere, and that had all sorts of text coming out of it.
Well, it doesn't have any writing, though. The text that's in there is your knowing. Oh, yes. That has all sorts of text. I'm sorry.
I was
thinking of the painting.
No.
You were thinking of the print.
The print,
yes.
Right.
Yes. And those two pieces fell totally flat in crit. Terrible pieces.
What? We're almost out of time, and I feel like I haven't begun to talk to you about your work. But I want to ask one last question. How has your work now informed how you write your history?
You know, that was a question it took me some years to answer. And part of it was, I don't really write history anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I discovered some years ago when I was invited back to Germany to talk at Göttingen, where the name Caucasian God applied to white people in Germany. And I realized that even before art school, the visual had been creeping into how I think about the past, and that is that I focus less and less and less on was one of the key questions for historians was, is this representative of something larger? And now it's kind of, I don't care if it represents anything larger. It's really interesting to me. And the second thing is myself coming into clearer focus for me as an interesting individual. For many, many years, I felt so inferior because I was a middle-class, educated African-American. And like in the 60s and 70s, that was of no interest whatever because you needed to be like Eldridge Cleaver.
That's right. That's right.
And with the writing of Olden Art School, I really did zero in on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that's hard for women to do.
That's right.
And it's hard for black people to do because if you insist on writing about or thinking about yourself purely as an individual, as yourself, that can be interpreted as being backing away from blackness. And I'm not backing away from blackness. Blackness is clearly thoroughly what I am. But that's not all I am.
We're going to end it right there because we're completely out of time. And I feel, like I mentioned, I feel like I just started the conversation with you about everything that's in this book. My guest tonight is Nell Irvin Painter. She is the Edwards Professor of American History Emerita at Princeton University. She's the author of such classic, important history books as The History of White People. And we've been talking about another important book and a really like emotional, interesting memoir, Old in Art School, a memoir of starting over. Nell, it's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking to you too, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.